Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to conclude our coverage of the Death Watch with some focuses on some of their weapons, some of their tactics, and a bit more of a dive into some of the events that they've taken part of. For those of you who are new to the cast, the 40K Lorecast is a weekly podcast focusing on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe. It releases every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern time in the U.S. It releases globally, actually, but 7 p.m. Eastern time, which is a U.S. time zone. That's made that clear. Anyway.
I love that you're just putting this in, period.
I just keep putting it in enough to keep forgetting. Like, anyway. Before we begin, though, please like and comment in the cast. Your likes and your comments are a massive help to us to spreading the cast to new users. Additionally, I have to approve all the comments, so I get a good laugh out of it. So for those of you who are leaving comments, I really do appreciate them, especially the person who commented on, I believe, 60 casts. Please do a Space Wolf cast. Oh, no, it was Tau. He asked for Tau, and he did it the week before Tau came out, and I had to go through 60 times to delete the comment because it just looked weird on there. I thought it did it once. So whoever you are, sir.
We did a Tau.
Yeah, we did a Tau, but I was actually more impressed you put that much time in. So good job.
I like your skills.
Yeah, every single cast we'd ever done, he commented. Or she. I don't know. Well, probably a user base. Before we begin, another quick announcement. On June 6th, 2024, we will be hosting our first 40K tournament. It is a major.
Yeah,
for those people who play the game competitively, this is a major. So it'll be a three-day event, seven rounds, 150-plus players in the Metro Detroit area, in a wonderful area called Southfield. If you're not from here, you might believe me when I say that.
don't be bad. Midwest, woot woot.
Yep, there'll be an event here in the Detroit metro area. So anyone looking to play the game, we will be there. We'll be hosting some additional events while we're there. On to that, though. If you click on the show notes, you'll see a link to it there. You'll also see a link to our website, our Discord, Patreon, and others. Of note, obviously, our Discord we bring up every time. Completely free site for all, any and all listeners. Or actually, even not listeners, you can find it. Do you? Like, I'm impressed. It was built really as a repository for all the fans of the 40K universe. We've got channels dedicated to the casts themselves, questions for the hosts, requests for future casts. There's even more stuff on, like, 40K literature. Like, give me some advice on some good books to read, hobby and gameplay, tabletop simulator, 40K games.
Everything.
Yeah, everything. As always, massive shout out to our mods on this. I genuinely would have burned this thing to the ground.
Talks about it all the time.
I ask the mods on a weekly basis, is it time? Is the exterminatus upon
us? Settle down, arson.
Yeah, is the exterminatus upon us? Anyway, so also a huge thank to you guys on that. Lastly, we always spend some time talking about Brad and his coaching services. You can go to our website. You can find some more descriptions about it. Also, the Discord has some pieces on it. Brad has been playing the game for over 30 years. He's been coaching for close to 10, and he's got really this great service available for anyone who wants to really dive much more into the game itself. You can reach Brad via our website or the Discord. He's happy to coach you no matter your player level. All right, so let's get back to the Death Watch. On the last cast, we talked about how the Death Watch operate differently than the Space Marines. They work in small groups, aimed at achieving kind of smaller but more critical objectives in the battlefront. And these like small squads are called kill teams. However, one thing we didn't dive into as much, I want to do it in this cast, was how specialized their equipment is. And
wildly different than the way that regular Marines operate, because they have units that would never be together are in a one specialized unit.
Exactly. But I want to have, let's have some fun with the Death Watch Armory, which is a little bit heretical, which is totally fine because they're part of the Inquisition. I will say the ADMEC love working with the Death Watch. It's their favorite faction to work
with. So many things to take home.
It's just all toys and there's no rules.
They're always buying from the gift shop.
Yeah. And this makes sense because the thing about the Death Watch is they spend all their time fighting against the Xeno forces of the galaxy. And while fighting the Xenos, the Death Watch discover that these mutants who were opposed to the light of the Emperor somehow, through obviously blind luck, stumbled upon some kind of nice technology. And by nice technology, I mean insanely advanced technology. And so it should be a shame to let this all go to waste. And that's viewed by both the Death Watch and the ADMEC very much so.
And it's a big deal with this because the Death Watch, I mean, and the ADMEC, are really one of the few people that are putting advancements towards weaponry. We are very, right now, we are dark ages of the Inquisition. It is, you're not supposed to change anything. It's heretical to do it. And they're doing it.
Yeah, not the Death Watch.
Yeah, I'm saying the Death Watch is definitely.
And the way that this, unfortunately, this has a bit of a break, again, between the tabletop and the lore. On the tabletop, Death Watch weapons tend to be, sometimes they get more armor penetration or more damage, but it's a hit and miss.
They've got a lot of weapons that work specifically versus...
Right, but
specific Xenos.
What I'm saying is in the lore, their weapons are better. So what I'm saying it's true. In the lore, a Death Watch bolter is more powerful, more accurate, and more reliable than a standard Space Marine one because they have these specialized armorers who are building them for these tasks because they are the special forces. Now, what I do love about them is that with the Death Watch, exactly that point, we talked before about when you join the Death Watch, you have to be a super soldier. You know, your captain, your lieutenant have to sign off on you saying that you can fight Xenos. Your apothecary has to sign off saying that, you know, you can heal better and you're stronger and you're faster. And then your chaplain has to come in and be like, yeah, he also won't spill our secrets. Love the chaplain. But that's just the soldiers. The same thing is for the weaponsmiths. So the Legion send the Death Watch the best weaponsmiths in the galaxy.
And this is a big thing when people send. It's not like, because you could say, oh, we're sad that we're sending our best people. But the Legions, for the most part, it's an unwritten, unspoken, I guess, competition, though. You want to make sure you want your best guy because our best guy is better than your best guy.
Again, the Death Watch, except for the Black Shields, are not secret. So if you're sitting there saying, oh, did you know that 20% of the Death Watch armorers are Space Wolves?
Yeah.
That's a huge thing for the Space Wolves. So that's why they're able to get the best and the best and the best, because they want to show that to everybody that, oh, our weaponsmiths are better than yours.
Right. And our whatevers, our eradicators are better than yours, our whatever.
Yeah,
people are very proud about that. And there has been a ton of competition since the inception of the Marine Legions.
You know, and that's actually, it hadn't occurred to you until you said that. That's a great way to look at the Death Watch, is that these guys... It's a public competition that actually is real. Instead of having an NFL combine or whatever, whatever the Pro Bowls turned into for the NFL in the U.S. or if you guys aren't in the U.S., it's whenever whatever main sport you have, they have some all-star game where all the best players play together, but no one tries. So it's kind of stupid. This one, no, it's all the best players playing together and trying. And
at their hardest.
You get to go, oh, wow, like I said, name the Legion, the Flesh Terrors, who probably don't get to be in the Death Watch.
Dudes kind of keep to themselves.
So not the Flesh Terrors.
But Gabriel Seth probably isn't sending a whole lot of guys over there.
Yeah, but I think the Griffins, how good are the Griffins here? All of the Minotaurs, there are all these chapters sending guys over. Who performs the best? You can see it work itself out. But on the Smith thing, I want to spend some time here talking about some of the weaponry that's used by the Death Watch, mostly the quintessential weaponry. And the first one is, of course, the frag cannon. And the frag cannon, I just think, is hilarious because the frag cannon is originally a dreadnought weapon. The Blood Angels specifically put these frag cannons on their dreadnoughts.
Yeah. However, the Death Watch put them on squads of guys.
Well, yeah, because it was a random Blood Angel artificer figured out a way to make it smaller and made it handheld. And then just gave it to it. So we took a weapon for a dreadnought and just gave it to a dude to carry around.
These really translate over, though. This is one of the things that I think transferred pretty well from lore to table.
Oh, yeah. Because the frag cannons might be the one. I'll just say it. If you have Death Watch veterans and you don't have frag cannons, you don't have to have them all with frag cannons. But, like, why wouldn't you?
Especially
have
frag cannons? Especially in later editions.
Yeah, they're not as good right now, but they were.
They were insane.
Eighth, I think. They could just mop the floor. So the frag cannon, it's like it just has two shots. It's got a slug and like a buckshot version, and this is it's his quintessential to them. Like I should, yeah, that's right. But I own eight of them.
Yeah. They're good.
Yeah, and what this does, what makes it so important, is that it allows them to handle single targets and horde. Because as we said, when a Death Watch kill team is deployed, they just get from point A to point B. They have an idea of what will be there, but they're not 100%. And the frag cannon gives them this incredible versatility where they can put it to slug and blast a hole through something, or they can leave it to kind of frag and just shred stuff. So the frag cannons are quintessential, combined with the specialized ammo in 8th edition. Ooh. These did some stuff. I watched Death Watch players pick up like 30 packs of orc. Back when we were 30 orc boys, they could pick them up
with your wounding on twos and everything else.
Yeah, wounding on twos and the frag cannons and all the extra. Similar to the frag cannon, you don't see as much of these as the Infernus Heavy Bolter. Another really cool weapon, though. This is a classic Death Watch weapon of let's just take a heavy bolter and slap a flamethrower under it.
They have a lot of that stuff. I'll make myself, as usual, old. They MacGyver a lot of stuff.
Oh, it's all worth it. Let's just put these two things together and see what happens.
You're like, I've got duct tape. We'll just make this a thing.
Yeah. And it works. Obviously, it works kind of similar to the frag cannon. You've got your heavy bolter, which allows me to blast through heavy armor, but if that heavy armor, I think of this one as being basically made for the Genestealer cult, where you're coming in, like, if you get close enough to the Primus, I can blast its head off with a heavy bolter, but I have to get through quite a few neophytes.
There's so many idiots in the way.
So I'll just burn all of them. And that's what these weapons are made for. I'm a huge fan of these. But one thing that they do have, though, that unfortunately does not translate to tabletop at all is their power armor.
Yeah. I mean, they don't do anything with this at all, to be perfect.
Yeah. So in the lore, they have something called the Aegis Vigilant, which is a special suit of power armor. And okay, there's going to be a canon conflict here, which we'll get to in a second, but we'll get to this piece. It is a special suit of power armor that was built by the artificers of the Death Watch to specifically like counter the weapons and tactics of Xeno species. So it's like it's resistant to Necron Gauss.
Well, the two biggest things is it was resistant to Gauss and it was resistant to psychic attacks.
Yeah, exactly. And beyond that, it also could have, it was also able to like have better visual tracking for Drukhari. So like, it was tuned up and it was this incredible suit of armor. It has no play on the tabletop whatsoever.
Absolutely none. Zero.
And the only issue with it I have with the cons, I like that they wrote this, but they also write that a space marine is sent to the Death Watch with their armor by their chapter.
Yep.
So I don't know when they would put this armor on. Unless it's Black
Shield. Unless they juice up their armor. They never really tell you because the you still have your shoulder pad and everything else that comes with it. So I don't really know where.
Like, where it goes, it's written down, and like I'm like,
well, it's also super cool. Is it a thing that's in your armor, or did you download a program that makes sure?
Maybe, yeah.
I don't really know.
The concept is super cool. Just it doesn't, and I mean, this is fairly common within GW in the sense that if it doesn't exist in the tabletop rule, it just kind of it's there in the background. And so my assumption is that someone. GW, as you've heard on our prior episode, has made some rules oopsies over the years. I'm sure at some point someone said, well, I think the Death Watch have a better save against Xeno weapons. And luckily, some of the rules writing team said, please don't do that.
So like, you want to save on a two and hit and wound on a two?
Yeah, no. We can't handle that volume of angry email. But however, one of the better pieces about this is the secret weapons that they carry. So the frag cannon, the artificer armor, the infernus heavy bolter, these are all, you know, these are weapons that are somewhat well known. Then there's the other chunk.
I was just about to say, there's a lot of other special weapons.
Yes. What I love about this is that all of these weapons kind of skirt right on the edge. And by skirt on the edge, I mean they cross it constantly.
They cross the line and skipped past it.
Yeah. And this being said, we talked in the last time about how the chaplain is saying, you know, the person we're sending, can he keep our chapter's secrets? The Death Watch does it back, and this is what's written down. Should a Death Watch member ever speak of the things of the weaponry used by a Death Watch outside of the Death Watch, they will be hunted down and tortured to death.
I love the note on our show. Their words, not mine.
Yeah, their words, not mine. That means that a Space Marine group would hunt down another Space Marine for telling Space Marines about their weapons.
Yep.
Yeah. Way to go, guys. But anyway, some of these are awesome.
This is my favorite.
Yeah, we'll start with the open one, the Xeno Phase Blade.
These are so good. These used to be so much better.
Way better before. They've toned this army down.
Yeah, because these used to cut through invulnerables.
Yeah.
The Hyperphase swords are just something that Death Watch has a lot of.
Yeah.
The Xeno Phase Blades were 100% Necron technology that they put into their, again, they took Xeno's technology and put it right into. And I love these because they just kind of cut through anything.
The idea, we covered this actually in the Assassin's Cast. It's very similar to the blade used by the Calexus.
Same thing.
Calexus or Calidus?
Calexus.
Calexus, yeah.
Or, no, whatever. It was the Calidus, actually.
Yeah, it's a Calidus. Yeah, the Calidus blade, where as she swipes through, it phases in and out of reality. So you having armor doesn't matter.
Means nothing.
And then reforms inside of you, so you die, and then unforms and comes back. They're used by all the Watch captains. I think the Watch Master's spear has one end of it. Yeah.
And this is all Necron technology because they were the only ones that had it.
Yeah.
Besides anybody that got something from it. And I love these though, because I just love the idea of them mass producing something that they wildly should not have.
At all.
Yeah. You wonder how many Inquisitors, because Necrons aren't something that a ton of the Imperium has ever even seen.
Yeah.
And you know one has been in a fight and went, wait a minute, I was with
Hey, did you just parry my blade with my sword?
Yeah. I was fighting with the Death Watch and they...
Yeah. And like, yeah, like...
like, this is not... Wait a minute.
Which tomb world did that come from? You know, afterwards they're checking a serial number, like, oh, that's why they didn't wake up.
Yeah, it's a big deal in this, and I love these weapons. One, they look super cool.
Yeah. Oh, they're modeled. It's fairly easy to paint them well because they've got the relief within the blades. Actually, it needs to paint into, and you can add. Well, there's so many great colors you can add to it. So,
and they've got some cool animations on some of the not just art, but some of the animations that are put out.
Yep.
They look super, super cool. I love them as a weapon because they style out lore-wise. They're awesome.
Codex with the guy was, I think the 8th edition codex, the guy was on the cover holding it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, looked super
cool. It just looks super. They just look super cool. I like them on the board, and I love them in the lore. I love the idea of having this forbidden weapon, and you give them to all of your commanders and stuff, and you're like, shh, you don't even tell the regular guys
what this blade is. It's just sharp.
Yeah, sharp and very colorful.
Yeah, why is it glowing like a light green color? Blades do that.
And it does kind of look like the Darksaber from The Mandalorian.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, very much so. Now, another one I do love, though, is the Atomizer Cannon, which I don't believe I've ever seen on the tabletop.
I don't think those exist at all.
Yeah. This one's just amazing in the lore. So its roots are from the Dark Age of Technology. And it's because this weapon is pure cruelty. It resembles a Melta gun, and it fires these highly active particles at its target. When they hit, they agitate, and they basically boil the cellular structure of whatever they hit.
Well, it's a big deal because you go, hey, isn't that kind of like gauze? You're like, no, it's...
No.
Well, no. What God's actually
Necron Gauss. It's like I'm not screwing up Gauss again. All right.
What it is, but I'm saying what it's supposed to do. What they describe it as.
Yeah.
This goes inside out. This is crazy.
Yeah. It melts you into goop.
Well, it's also, it's like what venom cannons and stuff do from the Tyranids. A heavy venom cannon?
Oh, yeah.
Because it sends a superheated bug, basically, you, and then it melts you from the inside out. These do the same
thing. I prefer squig launchers that shoot these squigs in you. And then the squig tries to climb its way out of you.
All seem bad.
Yeah, so atomizer cannons are amazing. We're sitting on a tabletop. Another one that's more just funny is the Balefire gun. And so the Balefire gun is it's meant to be this horrifying weapon that's only deployed against those who've fallen furthest in the light of the Emperor. Like, you could never use a Balefire gun against anything in the Imperium. It is a flamer that shoots radioactive fire.
Yeah, also it shoots radioactive fire right in front of you. It's like the worst weapon to use.
I find this much. This is the greatest adolescent boy concept I've ever heard of. Because it's like, well, yeah, you can have a flamethrower that'll burn them, but what if it also irradiated them? That'd be awesome. There's no need for this. Like, no one has ever been burning alive and worried, oh no, I wonder if I'm going to get cancer.
I'm going to get rad sickness
from this. Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, my prostate. What are we doing here? But you know what, GW? There was solid effort here. It's funny, so I'll lean into it.
It's also, hey, wait a minute. Am I going to get cancer from holding this weapon next to me?
Why am I shooting cancer? I'm shooting cancer out of the barrel that's not that far from my face. All right, but one of the cool ones from I'll explain it. It's called the Texorcism gun. It's harder for me to pronounce than it should be. So this gun, I just like the story around it. It fires an energy signature that specifically damages and drives out machine spirits from targets.
Also, they don't say where this is coming from. This only works against the other Imperium.
No, they say it works. It doesn't work against orcs. It works against, they were used for Tau. It's very heavily used against Tau.
I'm saying, like, it's specialized, though.
Yeah.
This is an anti-Imperium weapon, man.
This is where I had to read it twice. Because the first time you read it, you're right. But it's just an EMP gun. In reality, because the thing is, it's the Imperium. They say, oh, it drives the machine spirit out. But it works really well on things that don't have machine spirit.
Because shuts it down.
Yeah. What I love about, because it was primarily used against the Tau, because this gun would just turn off a battle scene.
I wish we had these in the game. In lore.
You know, really, so good. You're talking about adding a weapon in the game that's just specifically bad for Tau? Yeah, I support that. I fully support that.
Because in the lore, this also has a shotgun spread.
Yeah. And
they would just hit a crisis team and just have them.
Yeah, and it's just a bunch of dudes stuck in a suit that can't move.
And I want everybody to know, I am physically showing John.
Brad's doing a whole, every single cast, there's a giant marionette puppet show that goes off to the side of me here. Like, if you guys haven't seen Team America World Police, that's how this cast looks from my perspective as Brad goes through stuff. Durka, 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 durka. Anyway.
But I love this weapon because they have stories. They're old stories when they first had Death Watch, but they legitimately shoot this and you've got a bunch of guys frozen and are very tiny. If their suit doesn't move, well, they're just standing there.
The battle suit just stand there and someone walkers pushes it over.
And I love the lore in this because I get very excited about Death Watch, clearly, about some of these because they're so specific. Death Watch is a great army now. However, Death Watch used to be, and we talked about this in the last cast, so specialized. If you were Xenos,
you did not want to play Death Watch.
Yeah, and you played Death Watch. They had so much. I forgot about, we didn't talk about this last time. Their strats and stuff like that.
Some of the strats were hilarious. Oh. They just turned you off.
Yeah, well, they only worked against Xenos. It was just like, hey, am I playing Chaos? Am I playing another Imperium? Well, I guess I don't use any of my strats. Oh, I am playing Xenos?
Yeah.
Cool.
Let me pull out my book and start reading these off while laughing.
Yeah. They were just so brutal. You're like, you're playing Tau? Oh, I'm going to use this every turn. You're like, if you're playing GSC, doing this every turn. This seems unfair. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is terrible for you. All right, but one really great thing with the Texorcism gun. Remember earlier when I said the AdMech loved the Death Watch? Not this.
Oh,
the AdMech view this gun as an abomination.
It's unholy abomination.
And they are hunting it down to the point where the Mechanicus is working to destroy them wherever they can find them. So the Death Watch have to deploy them in secret. Which, again, the AdMech, by the way, are trying to get rid of a gun that kills their god. To them, this is a god destroyer. So I kind of get where they're at on this one. But the Death Watch have to hide the guns. And when they deploy them, when they go on deployment with them, they have to use them quickly and hide them again because the AdMech might just attack. Like, it's entirely possible the AdMech would bomb them from space just to kill a squad holding these.
Yeah, kind of. Unfortunately, they shot them. The AdMech, every single guy has enough mech in him that this would probably be bad.
But for those of us who played the tabletop, one of the best parts about this is their specialized ammunition.
Special ammunition is awesome.
It was a great rule, and they kind of brought it back right now, but it's not all the way back. It's not what it used to be.
It's strat-based now. You have to...
Which isn't what it's supposed to
be. You used to be able to load out your... You used to be... I think this was... The 8th edition was probably the closest they've ever
been. The 8th edition Death Watch is the best version of Death Watch. It's also the most lore specific.
Yeah, 100%.
It nailed. They really dialed in, and it was broken AF.
When you were playing certain things, and that's what the thing is Death Watch is a Tyranids specialized army. When you were playing Tyranids and you met Death Watch.
That was the worst.
Shit was going down.
The Death Watch into Tyranids was the worst combo the Death Watch had because of, and some of this ammunition we're going to talk about here. Because they kept this. So anyway, in general, the lore around Space Marines, just people are saying, is that there's really innumerable bolt ammunition types, missile types, grenade types. If you read any of the Black Library books, guys are pulling rando grenades out at times. They're light years specific. But none of that ever makes it to the tabletop. The tabletop, we have frag grenades and crack grenades. That's it. A couple of guys have, what's the trip? The trip grenade to lessen the charge.
Well, those are only very few on that.
There's a couple little random ones, but in the lore, there are hundreds, if not potentially thousands. And the idea is that the specialized weaponry can significantly affect the power output by tailoring it to a battlefield need. The Death Watch, though, take this to another level.
Oh, so much.
Yeah. And it's because, again, we've harped on this before, but I'm going to keep harping on it. The Death Watch are deployed around the galaxy, and they constantly have different physical compositions of Xenos. They have to exploit them in battlefield. And they're also oftentimes not really aware of what they're going to be fighting. So they go into battle. All right, the laws of physics don't make sense with the amount of different ammo they're just kind of carrying. But it does help because depending on what you're fighting, you need to do, you got to figure out something that'll work.
And they have just such a wide degree. They're effectively poisoned. They go ahead and make fun of me for this. But, yeah. I'd say more than half of their special ammunitions are toxins on there.
Well, it's because you can't just go to battle with the same thing.
Right.
Like, if you take a dull stick and hit a towel with it, it's very effective. But that same dull stick hitting a Tyranid warrior
does not
get bit.
You don't want to get bit.
Yeah, exactly. So, they adapt their tactics to handle each enemy. So those of you who played Space Marine 2, that opening bit where the Death Watch are trying to deploy a virus bomb into the atmosphere to affect the Tyranid invasion fleet, that's classic Death Watch tactic.
And they're tailoring of a virus bomb specifically for that because it's an organic, everything they have is organic.
Exactly.
And so they're trying, a virus bomb targets organic material.
And they knew it wouldn't kill them all off, but it would slow down the invasion so they could do more stuff. Where this goes much further down is, again, what we're talking about here, into ammunition. So let's jump into some of the ammunition because, man, there's some PTSD I have on these things. So the Hellfire shells.
It's my favorite.
Oh.
Has it ruined your army?
Yeah, it did. So the Hellfire shells are a bolt that has a hyperactive bioacid in their core. And it was built specifically for the Tyranids. Once it gets through the chitlin on the outside of the Tyranid, and then the acid deploys and melts the creature from the inside out.
And it's a big thing because the Tyranids were so adapting and they're making themselves more heavily armored for the tactics that the Imperium was using. And these were the counter to their adaptation because you'd hit them and they'd go, oh, that did nothing. And then the acid would seep in and burn them out.
And eat them on the inside. These invalidated Tyranids in the 8th edition.
It was a big deal because of the fact that you're shooting these rounds that are doing huge damage to giant Tyranid monsters that normally would do absolutely nothing.
A Tyrannosaurus could shrug off a las cannon, and a Death Watch guy with a bolter pistol.
Bolt pistol. That's true.
Yeah,
because you could have it equipped with
would wound on a two and do serious damage.
Yeah, because they were all two damage apiece, weren't they?
Yeah, they could wreck through them pretty hard. And that's back before we had actually had for much stuff had a high wound. The next one is the Dragonfire Bolt, which I also like a lot. This one, it's, you know, so as we said before, the standard Space Marine Bolter shoots an RPG. It's not an RPG style. The bolt goes in as soon as it feels a change in resistance, it then explodes on the inside, doing massive damage. The Dragonfire Bolt just was that with a lot more explosive in it. And it was designed to handle like hordes of low armor.
It's super low armor. Yeah. They wanted just the
orcs.
Yeah, it was made for orcs. Yeah.
The idea is that with one round, when it explodes, I could take out 2 to 5 orcs if they were clustered together.
Which they typically are.
Yeah, because orcs tend to run there. This, again, ripped my orcs to shreds. Like, there was...
I love some of these. These are the meat and potatoes of Death Watch ammunition.
Yep.
These are just what they have. They designed these specifically, and they cross over a bit because... What are they fighting? They're specifically fighting Xenos. They're fighting Orcs. They're fighting Tyranids. They're fighting the GSC, Gene Stealer Cold. These all work fantastic against those type of armies.
Well, and the next one is the Derevenant shells. I wish they'd bring these back in the current edition because they are made to handle the Necrons. And
these are so cool
in lore. Because these are amazing in lore, and honestly, in 8th edition, Necrons weren't very good. And so you didn't deal with this very much, but what this shell does is the core of it basically creates a disruption between the materium and the immaterium, so it turns off reanimation process for Necrons.
And we've talked about the Necrons. The Necrons' entire army and their philosophy is based on, we'll just reanimate whatever you kill.
Whatever you kill will come back. So imagine using this into a horde of scarabs. It would just
shut them out. Unit of warriors, things of warriors, that nature.
The spiders, any of those things, the destroyers. Okay, well, that thing's gone now.
Yep.
And again, a dude with a bolt pistol. Now, this is not when we talk about this Death Watch ammo, we actually should have mentioned that earlier. This isn't like a special ammo for one special gun. Every single gun they fire has this ammo in it.
In that particular squad, because you'd equip your squad with one type of ammo.
Most. No, you could check.
No, I'm saying.
In the lore, you can. On the tabletop in 8th edition, you chose.
You chose
every
whatever.
Time you went to shoot which one you were shooting.
Right. These
guys had like the, it's like the old video game backpacks where there was
everything.
Yeah, it was
unlimited inventory.
Unlimited inventory. Like you got a guy running around, he's carrying 52 guns and full ammo.
It just, in the lore, you would just choose certain teams to have certain things. But then you're kind of going, we know we're going to face this.
The last one, though, are the Hell Spears, which is a round that's just covered in runes that affect the warp.
This one
hurt. This one made Brad some sadness.
This made me sad.
this caused some sadness for Brad. Real bad ones. These ones could effectively go straight through a psychic defense. Namely, an old school force field.
One, it would do that, but it also, the old rule was it caused a perils.
Yeah.
So you would effectively scramble a psyker's mind, and he blew up psychically.
You would shoot the psyker. He didn't get a proper save against it. And then, he took a peril. Blow up. Yeah.
And he damaged everyone around him.
Yeah.
And because they had such low wounds, if they blew up, the next guy might blow up.
Yeah, if you took out a Farseer, it's pretty good likelihood the Warlocks were coming with them.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you just get this boom, 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 as a bunch of heads are popping.
Yeah. Oh, it was so much fun back then.
I mean, that made me so sad.
Oh, it was brutal. But they got rid of it, unfortunately, after 8th edition, because as much as this was dead on lore, I mean, like, no question, dead on lore specific, on the tabletop, it did create.
I don't know. I'm a weirdo in the fact I like having. Units and armies that are really good against certain things and not very good against other things.
Yeah, I mean,
Death Watch used to ruin Xenos, and it used to do meh against everything else.
And I could be wrong on this, and if you don't like this opinion, that's fine. I can be wrong, but my viewpoint has always been, I think given the diversity and the number of armies within 40K, I would like to see it where you do have auto wins. Basically, every army has one auto win and one auto lose. And then everything else, kind of, or something, a custom hat. And it's like, yeah, just a bit of luck of the draw. Because it's, as long as it's law, as long as it follows a lore specific type style thing, I'm totally fine with that.
They try to make too many things vanilla. That's for a different cast.
Exactly.
But it is a real thing. They've made a lot of things homogenous. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So anyway, we've covered their gear pretty well. Let's talk about the way that they fight.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
We've touched this in the last cast, but we'll do a bit more now. The Death Watch, they're the special forces of the Space Marines. Now, within a Space Marine faction, they go to war supported by a massive force. They've got heavy weapons platforms, predators, repulsor tanks, orbital cannons, all that stuff.
The Navy Guard. The thing is, we don't ever talk about that in the game. A lot of times you just have Marines, but Marines don't just show up with
Marines.
Well,
we talked about in the Oopsie cast where they did, they lore-wise, like, yeah, it wouldn't make sense to have your guard fight with your Space Marines. And then people like you broke that.
You're welcome.
It took away all of our fun. But this is the Death Watch, though. They're almost always, actually probably always outnumbered against an alien.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would go all in on saying they're always outnumbered because they deploy very small specialized squads.
And the Death Watch also will be deployed with the Space Marines. So we just said the Space Marines and the Guard or might be fighting a battle. The Death Watch are going to hit the same, maybe not the same battle, but the same planet or same system to do something to turn the tide of that battle.
They have a different target. They have a different, not as much target, they have a different tactical goal.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to do something specific.
So one of my favorite examples of this, and we hinted at it last time with the story now, is the Second Battle of Damnos. So Damnos was there's a Necron awakening on this planet, and it wrecked the Ultramarines in the sector. So Kalgar and Sicarius decided that defeat was not going to happen, and they re-engaged the Necrons, but they brought the Death Watch with them. At this stage in...
This is such a good story, by the way.
It's a great story. So at this stage, the Imperium actually realized how the Necrons were waging war. And they knew that when they slayed an overlord, they would, you know, teleport back into their tomb to be repaired and rejoin the battle. And so long as that overlord's alive, the Necrons function.
And the thing is that the Overlord usually had tech on him that aided the reanimation also. So he was making people come back faster.
Yep.
When he went back to the tomb, he was also speeding up the process. Most of the time, he'd show up with his entire retinue right back.
Yeah. He would warp down, and within a few minutes, he's back with everybody. So the Death Watch realize, so the Space Marines realize they have to kill this Overlord. And they decide the best way to do this is to send a Death Watch kill team into the monolith.
And a monolith is a flying building.
Yeah.
It just is.
So I don't know how they got in there. They just did. Okay. And they fought through. I mean, I need to really set the stage of how badass this is. They are inside a Necron tomb fighting warriors, scarabs. And there's scarabs at the tabletop are very different than scarabs in the lore. Wraiths are coming in and out of the walls.
A horde of them because they are fixing everything.
Yeah.
Also, you got to forget, you know, you put the wraiths and stuff, there's spiders everywhere.
Those are spiders, which are
because those are
don't see on the tabletop anymore.
They you see them one. They need to give a phenopainora.
Yeah.
But you see these spiders, which are huge constructs, which are in charge of just making and fixing things.
Yeah. And they're everywhere in here. They're everywhere. They're all engaging the Death Watch. And they're doing this, by the way, through a building they don't have a map for.
Yeah.
So they just have to, but they can figure out, get to the middle. And so they fight their way all the way to the middle, and they find the main sarcophagus of the crypt and then place melta bombs all over it.
So, but that's the funny thing. In this story, it's already heroic and awesome, but they also brought a comical amount of bombs because they didn't know what they were going to need.
One Melta bomb will blow open a Land Raider. They got all.
They just put all of the Melta
bombs. They just put them all on this thing. And so what happens is they time it well. They lie in wait. They hold their ground. But for whatever reason, you know, the Overlord above ground doesn't know what's happening. Kalgar and team kill the Overlord. Overlord warps down. It basically opens his eyes in his tomb to look at Melta bombs covering the tomb.
Everywhere.
And a Death Watch sergeant giving him the finger as they just blow the thing up.
Deuces. Yeah. Eat a Melta bomb, chump.
Exactly, yeah. And so the Death Watch of Spacers win the Battle of Domnos.
They also do talk about the fact that they over-exploded it because they're just like, run.
It was a bit of an oopsie, but it was still cool as hell. But this action probably saved thousands.
Oh, of Marines? For sure.
Marines,
because cutting through the retinue of the Overlord, it's his best warriors. Yeah. You've got Lich Guard and stuff like that.
And they come
right
back.
And you're taking so many casualties from them because they have their best weapons and armor.
Well, because the way the Necrons fight, you know, in the lore is as you would kill those Lich Guard, they would teleport off. But it's like they wouldn't knock them down a ramp. They would teleport off. So without the Overlord, they don't come back. Right. So the battle's over and then you can go blow up the thing. Another one I do like is when they're deployed against Gene Stealer cults. This is because Death Watch actually engaged Gene Stealer cult more than any other Space Marine chapter.
I wish they had more of these stories. One of my favorite things about the Death Watch versus GSC is the Death Watch going against the Gene Stealer cult. Mm-hmm. The Death Watch are just trained for what the look to. So they sniff them out. Real quick.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Because remember, the Death Watch are part of Ordo Xenos. And one of the main things Ordo Xenos does is deal with Gene Stealer cult incursions because it's between that and cultists or all the behind enemy lines problem.
It's a huge problem. Because this stuff happens in your... We talk about Gene Stealer cult. We did that, our cast on it. Mm-hmm. I do. It's one of my favorite casts we did. Yeah. It's a big deal because if you ruin a hive world... That's a big deal for the Imperium.
Yeah, it's a massive deal for the Imperium. And not only they're constantly hunting these things down. Because of this, the Death Watch are, to Brad's point, experts at fighting, at not just fighting the Gene Stealer cult, but also finding the Gene Stealer cult. They know all the signs of them. They know what to look for. And so they have... And this is really critical because of Exterminatus.
Well, it's a big deal in this because they don't want Exterminatus. They want to keep this hive world churning out hubcaps, whatever they're making. Yeah,
because the GSC incursions, more often than not, are on important worlds. You can't blow up a hive world.
Well, it's such a big deal in this. The problem is when the Death Watch uncover some stuff, they're usually, aha! And then they go... Oh, man, there's thousands of these guys around us.
Thousands. Millions.
Millions, that's true.
Yeah.
And I'm just talking their immediate what's happening.
Yeah. The Death Watch then have to go, all right, boots of mighty ass kicking.
Let's put them on, baby.
Again. And it is, these stories are epic because what they do is the Death Watch know if you hunt down the Patriarch and the Maguses, the rest of the GSC just kind of fall apart because they're just like the Tyranids, they do have a variation of a hive mind that controls them. And when you take that leadership away, the vast majority of Gene Stealer cult are like IQ one. Like they're just,
a lot of them too don't even realize what's going on. If you kill the Patriarch, all of a sudden you go, I'm super weird. What the hell is happening to me right now?
What's happening? Why am I so slow? So what the Death Watch do is they're masters at hunting down the Patriarch and the Maguses, because the Magus can also take over a little bit. And once they've hunted them down, then they just mop up what's left off of the guard members.
They also don't have instantaneous response.
Yeah.
Because they can communicate all over the planet. And once you take this away, it's a big deal. And the Death Watch are... amazing. And there's so many good stories.
These stories are great. So the way this process usually works is the Inquisition notices something's amuck somewhere and they go in and do their own investigation. In the investigation, they realize, okay, there is a Gene Stealer cult in faction here, at which point they call the Death Watch. And the Death Watch don't come in, as I said before, They don't come in guns blazing. They come in sneaky. As sneaky as a 7-foot, 400-pound guy power armor can be. But still very, very sneaky-like.
And this is what we'll get into the teams. But
they just deploy and wait, though. That's what I love. And they hide in the shadows and wait because they know what they're looking for. They're not looking for the regular, is it neophytes?
Neophytes or hybrids and stuff like that.
They're looking for that. They're just waiting for the patriarch. And when they
because
get
the they patriarch, will just lose eventually. The attrition will just bring them down.
Yeah. And so they get the patriarch and they kill it. And then they, as soon as they kill the patriarch, that's when they also go hard because, you can go back to the cast and we'll listen to it. The patriarch is the most powerful, but there still are sub-commanders, which are called the maguses. As long as the maguses are there, the genius of the cult can still function while waiting for a new patriarch.
And this is why also they'll sometimes send in the multiple teams because they'll put them, and these teams might be on other sides of the world.
Yeah, exactly. And they hit them all together. And once they hit them all together, what happens is, like, they, as we said in the cast, the Genius Slayer cult members, like some of the most, like the Abominants, for example, they hide them really well so you don't see them. But without these leaders, those Abominants will just come wandering down the hallway. Like,
like, hey, janitor's looking pretty funny right now.
Exactly. And so at this point, they bring in the Imperial Guard to hunt down the rest, and you save a planet.
And the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. The infrastructure is so much more important than the people. Come on, we can get more people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Imperium's really good at making people.
Yes.
Not keeping them around, but making them. Yeah.
So many people. Whoa. We don't want to get a new line going.
One interesting thing, this is my opinion, so I could be wrong about this, but I do believe the Death Watch may be the most diplomatically friendly internally inside the Imperium.
I was thinking about this when I first read, when I was getting ready for this cast, and there's not that many. I don't even know if there is. I might be wrong. For throw me out there in the comments if you could, but almost everybody's cool with having Death Watch show up.
Yeah,
because they don't mess anything up for you either.
That's my point. Everyone's okay with them. Not only that, though, they're also really good internal diplomacy.
Well, they don't cause trouble. Like if somebody from Ordeus Malleus shows up, you might have them interrogating you guys.
Exactly.
The Death Watch don't care. Nothing happens.
They work well with the Admech, the Sisters, all of the different factions of the Lords of Terra. They work with them well because they're doing, because basically what I will say is the entirety of the Imperium is aligned on two things. Chaos bad, aliens bad. But the chaos bad thing's tricky because there's a lot of, like, do we know chaos exists? Blah, 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 blah. Aliens.
Also, do we need to kill those people that fought the chaos?
Exactly.
Yeah. Are some of your guys now chaos? That doesn't happen with the Death Watch. They're like, yeah, we killed the aliens, now we're leaving.
Yeah, because the aliens don't infect things. Like, that's
right.
If I kill every alien, we're good now. You guys can go back to farming.
I'm leaving.
Yeah, whereas with the chaos, it's like, all right, which one of you is secretly a Zinch clone? Let's do this. Oh, and so that's why everyone likes them. What's even more impressive to me, though, is how well the Death Watch handle internal rivalries within their kill teams. Because we've covered this in the past, but, like, for example, Dark Angels and Space Wolves, they've got their little rivalry where they have their, like, every 1,000-year fight.
Meeting every year, man.
Yeah. But they also have the White Scars and the Raven Guard we haven't touched on. They have issues dating back to the Horus Heresy.
Yeah, it's 11,000 years of
the girl. Iron Hands and the Ultramarines have pretty serious disagreements on Codex Astartes. One of them feels it's pretty absolute. The other one's much more on guideline.
It's like the Pirate Code.
Exactly. It's suggestions. Very much so a guideline. Within the Death Watch, though, these guys fight next to each other. Like, it's nothing. And some of the stories are cool where they'll get along so well that when they go back to their chapters after serving, they'll speak highly of some of their rival chapters. Obviously, we're talking about the Space Wolves primarily. This one. It's most of the Space Wolves going back. Turns out they're not all pussies.
That's a big deal, though, is for a lot of the Marine chapters, especially Space Wolves, once you prove yourself to be a hero, you just are. You know what I mean? Like, we disagreed on a bunch of stuff, but that guy was heroic.
Yeah.
So, cool.
But there's so many Space Wolves who've come back from Death Watch duty and been like, yeah, actually, they can fight. It turns out, I saw it happen. It was an Imperial Fist, and he just blasted this guy in the face. Like, it was cool. Like, letting you know.
I do. And that's the thing is that also you're pushing forward. You have to be awesome when you're a Death Watch because, and this is something that doesn't get thrown out because they fold. You always play with 2,000 points in a game. Death Watch are never playing with 2,000 points.
But yeah, Death Watch should have like 800.
Well, it's not even that. They're also just not showing up. They've got 2,000 points that are spread out over five battles.
Well, yeah, if you're playing Death Watch, I mean, let's do this. If you're Death Watch on a tabletop, should be playing actually a different game. Where, like, you know, they're fighting. You've got your Eldar. I've got my Death Watch. You've got 2,000 points. I've got 350. But all I have to do is get my 350 to this one thing over there.
Yeah, we kill your Farseer.
One thing, and I win.
Yeah.
That's it. And I win the game.
You also should be playing Kill Team.
Yeah.
With the Death Watch plays, they fight in Kill Team, so they definitely are better.
Actually, I was thinking boarding action.
Ooh, boarding action. Yeah.
That's a really good way to play Death Watch is boarding action.
100%.
It is a achieve this goal with your small squad.
That's what they're trying to do because there are, your Death Watch should be. You should be playing your Space Wolves, and there should be a Death Watch kill team over here doing whatever the hell they're supposed to be doing.
And you're supporting them. Yeah, I mean, we're never going to bring back the allies, but Death Watch would have made sense as an ally.
Space Marine 2 does do a good job of this, though.
Yeah. So yeah,
in the campaign structure. Yeah.
So let's go into this a little bit more. Another one that I like about the Death Watch is their interaction with the AdMech. So in Space Marine 2, if you guys haven't played it, it's a good game. You should play it. You learn there's a massive just inherent distrust between the AdMech and the Space Marines.
I've watched the story so much. I've played the game, but I'm just so bad at shooters. I'm bad.
Yeah, Brad doesn't have I'm not good at them either. Don't get me wrong. You and I both like a good turn base.
Oh, yeah. I'm a turn base. I'll crush you in turn base.
I love a good
Bring your turn based on.
Yeah.
I play so badly at shooters that you're like, are you trying right now?
It's actually funny because you are a master of the ops of the shooter, Civilization.
Oh, yeah.
I'll sit there and play Civ 6 the whole way through.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Turn-based, anything's good for me. But I've watched the Space Marine 2 all cutscenes all the way through several times because I'm a psycho. I said the other day in our Discord, is it wrong that I psych myself up by listening to Marine speeches before I get up in the morning?
I will say Space Marine 2 has some incredible bits in it. Like, there's the whole Kalgar bit jumping off the Thunderhawk, not even caring.
Walking into the portal.
With the demons of Zeech and just killing them all.
The speech that the guys gave to the Cadians.
Yeah.
Where they're just like, I don't care what's happening. You're like, I just listen to it all the time. They got some great stuff with this.
By the way, in Space Marine 2, going back to where we're getting at, AdMech playing a lot. And the thing about the AdMech is that, in general, AdMech care about one thing and one thing only, and that's technology. And this creates a bit of a problem for a lot of the people in the Imperium because the AdMech have no care or compassion for life, or especially the lives of others. And they're happy to throw away lives in order to get some.
They give zero shit.
Exactly. The flip side, though, is that you know who comes into contact with more technology than anyone? The Death Watch.
The
AdMech have a weird relationship with the Death Watch because the Death Watch are their best opportunity to get there. So the Death Watch and AdMech actually get along really well. That's what I'm getting at. They get along really, really well. And the AdMech really support them heavily.
Well, it's easy to support on them on this because they operate in it's not even gray area. It's not, but it's not chaos. You know what I mean? It's not infecting and stuff. It's just
exactly
Xeno's technology. And why would I let that go to waste?
Yeah. I mean,
when I could use it.
I mean, look, the truth is Tau battle suits, the Imperium would love to have those.
Oh my God.
Change
the entire thing.
Just take all the Cadians, get
as much as we poo on that, but like if you could go, hey, instead of Terminator armor, you're all in crisis suits. Yes.
Well, they wouldn't be a space marine. They could take Cadians or Kasserkins and put them in a crisis suit. Oh, that seems to be working pretty well.
Yeah. We lined up all the Kasserkins and put them in Tau battle suits.
So as we've covered in the past, a lot of the top technology in the galaxy belongs to Xeno races. And so this Death Watch AdMech Alliance is finding ways to take this technology and use it for their own armaments, but to really to improve to what we were just discussing about getting battle suits for Kasserkins. This is how it happens. So the Death Watch, after every single engagement, come back, not only with the spoils of war, of what left over, but also recordings of what was going
how
on.
How it worked, what yeah, it worked how against. How it worked,
what they were doing. And then the AdMech take this and they just start dissecting not only the what's brought back from the battlefield, but also giving them ideas for new technology. I mean, I'll just call it out, Gravis Tech. Well, there's a bunch of this stuff in the primaries.
It came from.
Yeah, this I, when you look at a repulsor grav tank, and then you look at Eldar tanks.
Oh, that's the hilarious part is the AdMech kind of figure out how they're going to show this without it being heresy.
Yeah.
So it has to be just a little bit better, just a little bit better. But I love everything about this in the fact that they also, the AdMech do a good job of realizing we're the youngest race besides Tau.
Yeah.
You know, in the galaxy, well, of course they're going to have something we're going to use because they've had millions of years to figure some tech out. We should be using
it. Exactly. And this tech is massive. Again, for those of you who are newer to the game, you're not aware of this, but a lot of the current like big stuff the Space Marines have is new to the game. You know, the tanks were Predators and Land Raiders. And then
it was all things on treads.
Everything was on treads. Now they fly like the Eldar.
Yep.
Just calling it.
They're using grav.
Yeah.
Everything that Eldar uses, grav tanks, whatnot, and then the Imperium, as of 8th edition, we're currently in 10th,
yeah,
got grav tanks.
Exactly. In the case of AdMech, those grav tanks couldn't fly.
They used to fly.
Remember, they couldn't. Remember all the Space Marine ones could.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah, true.
Then you broke that by putting them on top of a building.
It's not my fault.
That actually is a photo of your army.
I'm not going to talk about that.
Your army. That your army got referenced in a GW article of, no, you can't do this.
I could at the time.
I know. Meanwhile, the AdMech got that weird transport that was like, oh, so it's flying above the ground. Yeah, it's not flying.
About an inch.
it has no fly keyword.
Yeah.
Anyway, this technology that we're discussing here obviously is huge. Necron phase technology, Tau plasma. Also, even Eldar microfilament becomes really, really useful. But not only the weapon, but also the defenses to it. Because the other piece, too, is being able to build technology and weaponry within the Imperium that can withstand this. Because what we should also mention here is that for the Imperium's sake, this new weapon, this new technology comes in. They improve the weapons. They improve the armor. You know who can't do that? Chaos.
Yep.
So this is why Chaos players... The Space Marines get better saves than you do. Your soldiers should probably hit on twos because they are 10,000 years old.
You should have figured it out.
Yeah, you should be a better fighter than Eric, who just...
But you also have the same shit you've always had. Yeah,
you're wearing the same suit of armor you went into the warp with.
You can get a demon infused. There's stuff to be argued for that. Yeah, but
if it's not demon infused, it's my point.
The new Imperium stuff is just better. Yeah. I mean, every line of Gravis and Primaris... Sorry, old Marines, but like all your new stuff's just bigger, faster, better.
Yeah.
And just protects better.
One area, though, that the AdMech really get to have fun is in biologic weapons. Kind of like, you know, in the modern world, we don't use this technology.
Well, there's a big deal in this because most of the Marine chapters still think of war as something they want to win, but it's still honorable combat and everything else.
Yeah. The bigger one to me on that, though, is it's more, you can't use biologic weapons. See Krieg, for example.
It
ruins the planet because it affects all of you. However, if the thing you're affecting is a Xenos, you can go much more to town and not really worry about it. So one thing that the AdMech and the Death Watch do really well is make special biologic and chemical weapons that are designed just to kill Xenos.
This is a huge deal because they've tailored toxins to just kill Tau, Eldar, Tyranids, whatever.
Mm-hmm. And this becomes, in the lore, one of the key pieces of things that the Death Watch did. We talked about earlier about, you know, when they put a bunch of Melta bombs on Overlord, fine. But actually a lot of what they do is deploying these chemicals, these toxins on battlefronts to turn tides. Because again, there's no danger. I could, in theory, disperse this into the atmosphere and all the humans there would be fine. So it's a great way to deal with to deal with GSC, by the way.
Which, it's a big deal.
Pumping through the system, all the GSC dying, and the non-GSC are there. Like, why is everyone lying on the ground convulsing? Like,
you said this before on this with the grenades. That's one thing that I wish we had more in the game, because in the lore, they just show up with... with the bat anti-shark repellent, they have an answer to whatever they're coming against, and they have grenades that just are horrific versus Eldar.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
This is my anti-Eldar grenade.
Yeah, it does nothing to anybody else. It's just a super toxin for you specifically. Yeah.
And so what the Death Watch do is they deploy these things all over these tiny little events, and they set off a virus bomb. And now... an entire section of an enemy invasion just dies in an instant. From that, I kind of want to transition from there to one of my favorite parts of the Death Watch, which is their long watches on the edges of the galaxy. So this last time a little bit, I'm going to dive a bit more into it. So every Death Watch member is sent to a fortress or, there's another term, or a station. And these stations and fortresses are strategically chosen due to their...
But they're all over the place.
Each of them is strategically chosen to deal with a specific Xeno threat in that area, or it's just pure dark space. Now, GW, when they write well, they write real well, and they went hard into these fortresses. They made some of them just light years cool. So, for example, there's ones on the edge of Tau space, the Orc worlds. There's ones that are following Eldar craft worlds about. We're going to talk about those in a minute. And, you know, it runs just outside the Eye of Terror and more. Let's talk about the main one. The main fortress is called Talassa Prime, and it's actually within Ultramar. This is the main spot. This is actually not placed there for Xenos. This is placed as like the research hub. So all the Death Watch, this is coordinates with all of it. It's where all the R&D work goes. They're validating a lot of the testing of weaponry. And it's actually, you know, it's kind of the main hub of Death Watch.
But it's not like this is a castle. It's not a small fortress. It's a planet.
It's an entire planet.
The whole planet is designed, is just working on Death Watch stuff.
Yeah. But that being said, that one's not interesting to me. The ones that are interesting to me are the ones that are further out. So, for example, the fifth sphere of expansion by the Tau, there was a watch fortress called the Die of Amicles that was there. And it kind of wrecked it.
They have a couple of these. We'll talk about this one, but I have to give, they went Big D Jones on a couple of these fortresses, because they just went, dink, here's a fortress where? Right in front of the guys.
I'm looking at you. So that's what I'm saying. When you talk about this, the fifth sphere of expansion for the Tau hasn't gone well. It's because as they began their expansion, the Eye of Damocles was right there, and they launched full-scale counterattack right into Tau before they even saw it was coming.
They did the same thing versus the Kronos wing of the Tyranid invasion. Was it Kronos? Yeah, I think
it was Kronos was coming in. Yeah, and then which station was just went nope. That's not happening.
We're just like we're right here right now. You're like you're right in the way. You're like we're putting on a new porch here.
In the case of the Damocles one, for example, they were meant for Tau. So the Tau were beginning an expansion. They hit a force that was tailored specifically to fighting them. Knew their tactics, knew their everything, and wrecked them.
Which is so funny because the Tau had never experienced that either. Mm-hmm. It was anti-Tau weaponry, and they went, "What the hell is this?
What the hell just happened?" That being said, though, the other really cool thing is that while, like, Damocles and Talassa were built by the Imperium for the Death Watch, a bunch of the others are claimed, which makes these ones really cool. One of my favorites is Damaroth, which is a massive fortress that is actually a ring around a moon. It's like the same, the rings of Saturn or Uranus. No way I wasn't going to say that. But it's a solid structure. And the Imperium one day just found it abandoned, and like a bunch of hobos just moved into it.
Instantly. They're like, the best part is it was clearly Xenos.
Yeah.
They're like, this is us now.
Yep, this is ours. They, to this point, have no idea who built it or when it was built. And they found six of them, and all of them sit within the void of the Milky Way. Another one is just funny.
Why? Because it was we killed them and then went, thanks for your stuff, chump. Go get your own.
So the Death Watch unlike, you know, the last one, unlike Dameroth, which we've talked about, where no one knows where it came from, we're very well aware of where Zarabek came from because they took it. There was a race called the Mukhlari, I'm going to go with as a pronunciation.
Also, it's not like we just took it, and it's not like we defeated them. We killed all of them. Oh,
yeah. This story's awesome. Actually, this is a fun story. So the Death Watch.
I like how we start off. We're like, we're about to tell how about the genocide of a race. Bend down, guys. Yeah, it's hilarious.
This one is funny. So the Mulari are a race that actually were preservers of knowledge and information. And the Imperium just went, yeah, that's not cool. And launched a full-scale attack on them. Defeated them all the way back to their main planet, their main fortress, which is, obviously Zarabek. Once they got there, they decided the best way to handle a race who are masters of knowledge and information is to invade their fortress and burn everything all the way down, all their data crystals, all their knowledge banks, everything. And after burning all of this down, including all of the people that were there, everything there, they, I guess, got servitors to gather all the ashes that were left over, took all the ashes, shoved them in a rocket and fired the rocket into the sun. Because,
like, dick move, man.
Xeno technology is heretical, and we're going to solve that by firing it literally into the sun.
They also just killed the librarians.
Yeah, well, and the best part is that this was a mini black library, which we haven't covered yet, but we will. And the Imperium went, nope, black library of forbidden knowledge. Into the sun. Send all of that into the sun.
They were so woefully prepared for us because they're like, hey, guys, what's going on? I'm on fire. Also, why?
And then they moved in. Another cool thing about the Zarabek is that it actually sits in the dark void of space. So it's really well hidden. So this is one of the more important fortresses for the Death Watch because alien races don't know it's there. Because they can't see it. So they often, like a Tyranid invasion, for example, would go right past it because there's nothing there to eat. Yeah. Same with Eldar. Eldar might be able to detect it. Tau would miss completely, but they're nowhere near this.
I would say they're nowhere near here.
It's a very lost Tau ship that gets all the way over here.
The Tau ship that's out here is super bum that he's out here right now.
Well, yeah, especially because they don't have faster than light or warp travel. So if they're out there.
They do. It just didn't go so well for him.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's the guy who reappeared here. Like, oh, we're...
Remember that? You
know, I'm finally out of the war.
That entire invasion fleet that they went, so anybody know where those guys went?
That's Zarabek. Another cool one is it's Aniux Patrol. This is just more funny. It's not a station. It's just a bunch of warships that are kind of tethered together. The Death Watch decided to build their own craft world.
They just made a flotilla. It's the Quarians from Mass Effect.
Yeah, and they're doing this because they saw the Eldar craft worlds and went, let's just do that. And you know what they do with it? Hunt down Eldar craft worlds.
They don't hunt them down. They just harass them.
Yeah,
they're just being dicks to them, basically. You're like, why are you doing this?
Hey.
Screw you.
It's what they're just trying to chase them out of the neighborhood. That's all.
Pretty much.
Hey, get out of here. Get out of here.
Come on, get.
Go on.
Like, you didn't even do a full invasion. You just irritated us and made us leave. You're like, yeah, I know.
So one of the most important ones, though, and also this one frustrates me really badly, is Arioch. And because it's unfinished. So there's an area of the galaxy called the Jericho Reach. This is out where Tau are. Right? So it's on the right side of the galaxy.
Eastern Fringe.
Which is not to be confused with the Walls of Jericho, which is just a lazy Boston crab. But anyway, the Jericho Reach. The Jericho Reach has always been a nightmare zone for the Imperium. It's over, again, on the right side of the galaxy. And this is the area right where they've discovered the Tau, and they were going to go and, colonize the Tau, but then the warp storms ate them. So then you had the Wars of Goj Vendir, all that stuff.
I was just about to say, don't play off on the fact that Goj was over here doing crazy shit.
What's fascinating, though, is that while all that's going on, the Tau are rising up, all this stuff, there was a Death Watch fortress there, and... that fortress, Arioch, is all the way over there. Now, what's really cool about this is It's obviously man-made, but no one knows how, because the construction would have been impossible this far out for what it's dated as. Well, and the technology to move it and necessarily
it's
move there.
So big, though. We didn't really go into that. Yeah, it's huge.
This station should exist in and around Seoul.
It's a Death Star.
Yeah. No one knows how it got there. And it seems to have quite a bit of technology that's more akin to before the Great Crusade. So this might be a golden age of technology build, but as we get to a second, also could be a dark age of technology build.
That's where my head goes for it, because this is effectively alien technology for us. That's where I was going with it.
It's alien technology made by humans.
Made by humans, but like we just don't know what it is.
In the center of it is this great secret. It's called the Omega Vault, which is just at its core. It's no one knows what this thing really is. It's just a giant door with a big lock on it. They can't tell how deep it goes. No one knows much about it. They just know there's a giant door and only one door. But on rare occasions, the doors open and they reveal an artifact. And it's always some sort of discovery that then leads to more mystery.
What I would say it is, it's the Room of Requirement, which if you weren't such a heretic and watched Harry Potter.
No idea what you're talking about.
You're upsetting.
The truth is, there'll be people who'll be listening to this cast. Like, somebody's, I can't believe you never read Harry Potter. And it'll be a couple years in the future. I'm like, yeah, my kid and I just did. It's fantastic. You guys are all right. It came out when I was already like almost 20, and I didn't watch it. And I knew eventually I'd have children. So now I will enjoy it with my child when he gets older. Whatever. This tomb does drive me a little bit nuts, because they get really good stories about the tomb opening and getting some stuff. But it's a lot of this is codex stuff, so you never get it fleshed all the way out. It's always a partial story.
The stories
are so good, I need more.
And the shit they get out of this tomb, also, you go, where the hell did this come from?
Yeah, it just appears. Effectively, the doors open. So I'll give you an example. So one day, the doors open, and there's just a spear sitting there. And they pick the spear up, and it takes them to a imperial world that has fallen to worshiping an energy being, which is totally a Seitan.
Yep.
Because the world, by the way, turns out later to be a Necron tomb world. And the kill team go there with the spear, and they kill the entity with this spear.
Which they would have done absolutely nothing to without the spear.
Without the spear, the entity would have gone like, why? Like, what are you trying to do? But that's the full story in that one. We don't get anything more. Another time, there's a chronograph, which if you don't know what that is, it's just a device that has spinning wheels on it. And it tells time. Chronographs are a way of telling time, a very complex way of telling time. And it was counting down to zero. And the Inquisition just showed up and couldn't figure out what it was or what it was counting down to and took it with them. So, I don't know. Like, these ones, that's what I'm saying. The stories are really cool, but they're random. Another great one is that it just opens and there's a bolt gun there. Just a bolt gun.
Which it looks like absolutely nothing to.
It's just a normal bolt gun. And then when they look at it, it's got engravings on the bolt gun showing it was actually used by a space marine at the Eternity Gate, which is like a billion light years away. Not really, but like from where this place is.
So far,
though. There's no way that bolt gun could get here without some sort of nefarious thing. And the question is this really a vault or not? And no one knows, because it feels less like this is a vault built in the station than more the station was built around the vault.
Ready for Brad's?
Go.
Brad's theory of the week? Mm-hmm. I think that this is driven completely by a dark age of technology AI, and it gives them information based on what it thinks they need.
I think it's an old one-esque relic that was found. And then loaded in. I think what's inside the tomb is something from the old ones. And that's how it's able, because a lot of this stuff helps them either predict the future or gives them clarity into the past. It gives it, but it's always a little bit obscured.
Yeah. I mean, they're giving him, they're also getting items that they shouldn't be able to get, I guess. So
exactly.
I can see that.
My thinking is the way they've written it is I think this is something that was, this is Malkador. This just has Malkador written all over it.
I just think he would have used. He used the Iron Man and stuff like that.
That's what I'm thinking.
That's why I think this is a dark age of technology AI, because it's something that keeps giving you breadcrumbs to a greater mystery.
Oh, you know, and that's actually, you're right. That actually makes more sense, because the thing is, it seems to always be helping aid humanity against Xenos, which it would be weird if the old one tech was doing that. So you're right. It's more likely something that it's an AI from Dark Age of Technology that's helping humanity succeed.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
Also, they just let this happen.
Yeah.
I love when there's just pure heresy going on. They're like, eh, it's probably not.
Probably fine. So the best part about the Death Watch to me is it's more from a lore standpoint, they fight the random Xenos in the galaxy. One area that I struggle with GW, of the game, is that I want to know more about what's going on not on the tabletop.
Yeah.
I love it. Tell me more about what's happening over here, over there. And the Death Watch are the source of that, because they basically spend all their time interacting with the NPCs of the galaxy. Every tiny Xeno race that's not large enough to be playable have to deal with the Death Watch.
Say, so if you're a librarian and then all of a sudden you get set on fire, yeah the Death Watch did that to you.
Exactly. Well, I mean, yeah, they were asking for it. They were writing.
You should have been writing stuff down.
Stop writing all this stuff down, alien. You know, good God.
How dare you?
And it gives us, these stories really give us incredible glimpses into how diverse and crazy the galaxy is. You know what? Actually, no, screw that. I have an idea. Let's stop here. Let's cut this on Death Watch. A little bit of an abrupt cut, but they're going to come up more. Next week, let's do an episode focusing on some of these random races. Because it's a good way to kind of talk about Death Watch.
I'll give my first of the cast. To be fair, there's so many non-in-game races, there's wildly more.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. So according to Lexicanum, there are 347 non-codex races in the galaxy.
It's many more.
I can't do all of them, but this is going to be Ragdan, the Slaan. If you don't know who the Slaan are,
they're awesome.
The Slaan you're going to love. The Jokero. We might do the Saruthi. I'm not sure if we can do Saruthi because I don't want to ruin the Eisenhorn novels for people. We'll have to decide if we want to do them. It's a really cool thing, but those books are...
As far as, and I put this out to a lot of people when they ask what to read first, and my go-tos, and I'm going to say this to everybody because we get asked a lot.
Yeah.
I say that if you're starting to read the 40K novels, Horus Heresy and the Eisenhorn books are probably where I'd start.
The early Horus Heresy.
Horus Heresy,
like 60 books. So you should start with these 60 novels.
No, you just start with Horus Heresy. Yeah.
It's the first four. You read the first four, then you do Eisenhorn, maybe you do Gaunt's Ghost, because it's those. But yes, you know what? We won't do Saruthi, you know, I think about it. I don't want to ruin that, because it's a really great reveal in the book.
And if you're going to go for fun, if you want to mix it in, all the Kaifas Kane novels are fantastic.
The Kanes are good. Some of the Orc ones are good, too.
Yeah, those are funner reads because they're so off the wall.
Yeah, this will be fun. This is a good idea. So I think what we'll do is we're not going to cut the Death Watch at this point, because they're going to come up a bunch more. I think it's a really great way to kind of tell the Death Watch stories is basically how a lot of these races were eliminated by the Death Watch.
Oh, yes. And we just took their stuff consistently.
Because I will say that for GW, for those of you who are like newer to this, GW writes side stories better than anyone I've ever seen. Most writers are very good at campaigns. So it might just be that everyone at GW has horrible ADHD. and so like the campaigns, they can do them. But if you give them, hey, write four paragraphs on this random thing.
Well, I mean, they're all playing. You're just doing Skyrim and Fallout where you only do side quests.
All side quests. The GW side bits are incredible.
With great ideas.
And because they're really cool. The Slaan are ones we'll spend a bunch of time on, because the Slaan go all the way back to pre...
Well, they're a fantasy race.
Well, they are fantasy, but they're also the ones who controlled the enslavers.
Yep.
Who controlled the Ragdan.
Yeah, I was saying,
they controlled the Ragdan. So, all right, but we'll do that next week. So, this has been fun, and we're doing kind of an abrupt stop. Sorry, but I have to start writing an episode now. So, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
We'll see you guys next week.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.